Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the Brian Lehrer Show podcast. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but everything we do is available on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
There was a very large volume of fire, so that for it to spread that quickly gives us reason to call it suspicious, and also the time of day, and supposedly nobody's in there.
New York City Fire Commissioner Nicholas Scapetta on why the biggest city fire in 10 years, other than on 9/11, looked suspicious. And that's just the physical evidence. As it happens, the scene of the fire, as you may have heard, the Greenpoint Terminal Market, was also the scene of a real estate dispute between developers Josh and Jack Gutman, who plan to build luxury condos and office towers there, five towers rising along the East River, and preservationists who wanted the warehouses on the site preserved for their historical value. The Gutmans are father and son. Their lawyer suggests squatters may have started the fire, but the Daily News quotes sources today saying accelerant was poured in five different spots. So we'll begin today by digging into all of this, the history, the politics, and the evidence surrounding this 10-alarm blaze. With me now, Lisa Kersavage, a preservationist with the Municipal Arts Society, quoted in the Daily News today saying she's heartbroken by the loss of part of Brooklyn's heritage in the fire. The Municipal Arts Society, you should know, is one of the groups that had requested the warehouses be preserved. And Village Voice reporter Tom Robbins, who writes frequently about landlords and developers. Tom, welcome back. Lisa, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Lisa, let's do some history first. Why are you heartbroken by this fire? What got destroyed here?
Well, it was, it's one of the most important complexes on the Brooklyn waterfront, an important part of Brooklyn and New York City's industrial heritage. It was both significant in terms of its history to Greenpoint, and also architecturally, it was really quite interesting, taken as a whole. So much of Greenpoint was developed with the housing of people who worked at places like Greenpoint Terminal Market. It was originally the American Manufacturing Company. It started about 1890, started it just on covering one block and expanded to about six. They were dedicated to the production of rope and bagging, and expanded many times over its history, and it became the second largest employer in Brooklyn.
About 2,200 employees, I think I read,
yes,
in their heyday.
That's correct. And it was actually, they had large contracts with the federal government, too, who in World War One, who feared a shortage of oakum, which is a part of a rope that was used in caulking the seams of wooden ships. So they had large contracts with the government and also all the shipbuilding outfits. And that company was had a presence in the buildings until about 1950.
So from the late 1800s till 1950, that was a major work center. And did housing, you said something about housing spring up, what, around it?
Around it, yeah. Something like 90% of the housing in Greenpoint was built prior to World War II, and much of it was built by the shipbuilders who worked on the waterfronts of Greenpoint. And so, they came and built the houses, and people that worked in these large manufacturing companies lived nearby. So it has a very special character. I was touched once when I was talking to the community about the preservation of these buildings. One woman said, everybody's parents worked in those buildings.
So this was Irish and Italian and Jewish, and did it seem to concentrate in certain communities, this employment?
I'm not exactly sure, but I think that you're correct in your characterizations. Of those groups.
Tom Robbins from The Voice. No one's accusing the owners of the land, Joshua Gutman and his son Jack, of ordering this fire, but as the owner of land in a development versus preservation dispute, obviously questions are going to be asked, and we don't know if someday they'll be accused. But tell us about the Gutmans and their place in New York real estate.
Well, this is a family which has been a big investor and owner of real estate, Brian, along the Brooklyn waterfront for about 10 or 15 years. And this is one of the largest parcels that they've had, and they've been sitting on it awaiting some move for redevelopment. And with the redevelopment that passed the city council last year for the Greenpoint Williamsburg waterfront, clearly there was a green light, and there were investors lining up ready to sink their money into some of the towers that are going to be rising along that waterfront now. And this would have been one of the areas. The one problem they were facing, as Lisa just said, was that there was clearly going to be a movement to try to landmark this building.
Their problem was Lisa.
Well, we weren't trying to be a problem. We had been talking to the Landmarks Commission about designation, not of every single building. There are 16 buildings on this site, and we were quite positive that there would be a way to preserve the most significant buildings that would, you know, retain the character of the complex, while at the same time allowing for development, even towers, to be built there.
How much do you think what you wanted would have hampered what they wanted?
Well, I think when you do a project that includes both old and new buildings, it's more complicated. It's harder to figure out. It's a lot harder than a blank slate. And I think it would have taken a little bit more time and a little bit more money.
So, Tom, there was another fire just 2 years ago involving a Gutman building on Water Street in Dumbo that was caught in a development dispute. Do you know what happened in that case?
Well, there was no finding ultimately of any responsibility for arson, but that's what the fire marshals there originally decided that it happened. I mean, look, if people are looking cross-eyed today at Joshua Gutman, it's because he's sort of earned people's suspicions. I think what happened at those buildings which are on Water Street and Dumbo was a long, sad tale that involved some of the worst landlord-tenant harassment that people had seen in a long time in that part of Brooklyn. There were somehow somebody went in and cut power lines in the building. Gutman himself acknowledged that at one point he cut off the water sprinklers in the building. The tenants even at one point formed a fire watch committee to try to inspect their building to try to make sure that there were no fires at that point. They were worried that there would be. And there was a somewhat similar scenario in that the owner was trying to get a rezoning and a permit to build apartments there. He lost it. And then, again, early in the morning, and this time at 3:30 in the morning on February 18th, 2004, there was a huge spectacular fire that took 10 hours to bring under control. There were six firefighters that were injured, and that basically resolved the issue in terms of the tenancy at the building. So, again, he was not charged in that case, but clearly, I mean, you talk to the politicians who were active in trying to help the tenants at that point hang on to those buildings, and you talk to people who've been talking to Gutman since then. The guy does not have a great reputation.
My guest on WNYC, Tom Robbins from The Village Voice, and Lisa Kersavage, a preservationist with the Municipal Art Society, as we talk about the politics, the economics, and the evidence in the suspicious huge fire in Greenpoint yesterday. And we can take your phone calls on this, any aspect of it, at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Any firefighters or fire safety experts want to weigh in on whether this looks like arson to you? Anyone who lives in the area? Anyone else? 212-433-9692. And I should mention that as we called Tom and Lisa this morning, we also called the attorney for the Gutmans to invite him on the show, but we haven't heard back as of now. Tom, to stay on that Dumbo story for a minute, the community board had opposed the development project and Gutman had withdrawn it before the fire. And I know that something is going up on that site now. So did the fire ultimately pave the way for Gutman to get what he wanted?
After the fire, it was resolved that there was no more tenancy at the building, and he was able to redevelop the site in a manner, not quite exactly what he wanted, but to reconfigure it so that there was able to be some market-rate development there. What he'd had was sort of one of these buildings, of which there were many, still are some down in Dumbo, which were a hodgepodge of tenants, many of them artists, who were living in some cases jerry-built housing that didn't meet the zoning standards, but that had managed to avoid being sanctioned by the buildings department for years. The fire department had investigated that building, found it, if not legal, at least not to be unsafe. And then all of a sudden, a buildings department inspection crew showed up and decided that everybody had to leave one of the buildings there, 247 Water Street. And after that, he went after an adjoining building, 255 Water Street, and when he couldn't get people out there, he cut off the sprinkler supply. So it just had all the earmarks of this was a landlord who was bent on trying to get possession of the site.
Wait, he cut off a sprinkler supply, meaning the kind of anti-fire safety device, that kind of sprinkler?
Yes, the kind of, since these were manufacturing buildings, they did have sprinklers in the buildings, and he cut them off. His argument at the time, this was, I think, in the early winter of 2000, was that he was worried, since the other half of the building was unoccupied, that the pipes would freeze. Therefore, he had to cut off the sprinkler system.
And Lisa, does the fire yesterday make any request you had to preserve the historic buildings moot?
Well, you know, I don't know the extent of the damage. There were 16 buildings, and some were, you know, it looks from the footage, the buildings near the river are in bad shape. But
I read the number that I've seen in the papers is that 15 buildings were destroyed in the fire. So would those likely be 15 of those 16?
Quite possibly. But across from West Street, at West and Noble, there's two very interesting cast concrete buildings. And I don't think the fire crossed West Street. You know, they were a significant part of that complex. And also, it looks like the sky bridges were still extant that go down Noble Street. And that was really one of the most striking features of the complex. But it's hard to speculate right now.
Let's take a phone call. Joshua in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Morning.
So what's up,
hello.
Josh? Yeah, hey,
hello.
Josh.
Yeah, hi. For my two cents, I think these buildings should be taken away from him. He's shown enough, he has enough history to show that he is, perhaps he's actually guilty of this thing and that he's used it before. And the fact that he cut off a sprinkler system in a building or previous shows that he has severe disrespect for life and property. If there's a contractor in the middle of Brooklyn who can take buildings away from property owners to build up a stadium, certainly these buildings can be taken away from this guy.
Josh, did you tell
him from doing other things?
Did you tell my screener that you're a firefighter?
I am.
And so from what you could tell here, what does the evidence look like in terms of arson, or is there any evidence that even points to who might have done it?
Well, I wasn't there, and I can't tell you. I've seen basically what anyone else has seen on the TV.
You might just see it with a better eye, that's all.
The fact is that the fire marshals are the ones who are going to determine that, and I don't think the public is aware, but there is a virtual epidemic of arson cases going on, at least in Brooklyn, where I work.
What does that mean?
Well, buildings are going up in flames that are, it seemed to me, and I, once again, I'm just a fireman, and I'm not an arson investigator, but When you keep going to these fires in vacant buildings, that when after they burn down, all of a sudden a six-story apartment building goes up, it leads me to believe that not just this landlord, but several contractors and building owners are using arson as a tool to get around zoning regulations, historical property designations, in order to put up, pack in as many apartments as possible.
Joshua, thank you very much for your call. And Lisa Kersavage, we have to take a break in 30 seconds, but put that in historical context.
I don't have examples of buildings being, landmark buildings being burned down. But I can say, though, in having visited this site recently, over the last 6 months, it deteriorated very, very rapidly. A lot of the windows were removed. It looked like one of the roofs was removed from the building. I was getting very concerned about the condition of it.
We'll continue in a minute, and yes, I will ask Tom Robbins about his historical take on the context of fire in New York City real estate disputes, and we'll take more of your phone calls as we talk about the ramifications of the big fire in Greenpoint yesterday, the biggest fire in New York City in 10 years other than 9/11, with arson suspected. 212-433-WNYC.
It's a particularly gorgeous example of industrial architecture. Now that there's so much development on the waterfront, I'd propose that this building be designated as a landmark so that it would be preserved.
City Councilman David Yaski from Brooklyn, one of the proponents, as he just said, of landmarking most of the buildings that burned down yesterday at the old Greenpoint Terminal Market. We're talking about the implications of the fire. We're talking about the science, the politics, the evidence with Tom Robbins, columnist for the Village Voice, and Lisa Kersavage, a fellow of historic preservation at the Municipal Arts Society. The Municipal Arts Society also had filed for some of the old warehouses there that used to provide a lot of jobs to Brooklynites before 1950 or so to be preserved, making the waterfront development of five high-rise towers along the East River that the developers Joshua and Jack Gutman wanted to put up a little more difficult. So people are wondering how this suspicious fire got started. And our phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Tom, I'm still reeling from that call from that firefighter talking about, you know, the rash of suspicious blazes that he sees in buildings around town that that then get developed into luxury condos.
Right. Let's hope we weren't the only two reporters listening right then, Brian. It certainly was food for thought. I also was very interested in what he said. Look, if what he says is true, it's not something that we've been hearing any alarm bells being rung either by political folks in the city or by agencies at this point, but that wouldn't be the first time. I wrote a lot about arson in the late 70s and early 80s in New York's neighborhoods when there was no question but that it was a landlord tool for both stopping losses on buildings where they could no longer make a profit, but also clearing the way for properties where they could rebuild either with government subsidies or some other method so that they could make a greater profit from better paying tenants. And at one point, it was arson among landlords was so organized that there was a group which basically brokered arsons. You would contact a guy named Joe Bald, who was later prosecuted in three boroughs and federally as well for running a ring of arsonists where landlords would basically dial a fire. They would call him up, and he would dispatch torches out, and they would take down your building.
And what a great name for an arson broker, Joe Bald.
Yeah, and he was chronicled here in The Voice by Jack Newfield and Joe Connison. I wrote about him in City Limits magazine back then. But, you know, I mean, it was that was terrifying at the time because a lot of these were occupied buildings, but the M.O. was almost always the same. They would hit early in the morning or very late at night, and they would almost always do a vacant rear apartment in the top floor of the building so that they could basically open up a hole in the roof and let the elements do the rest of the work to take down the building. It was a very effective strategy. And it was guys like Josh, actually, it was firefighters on the line, I think, who first did blow the whistle when they started seeing a pattern of that, which later led to a massive investigation by New York City fire marshals.
Derek in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I was inspired by the firefighter called in about the rash of fires in Brooklyn. I have seen some of those, and a friend of mine is a council person on New York City Council who's protested or at least commented on the news about some of the fires seem to be suspicious. Yesterday, 125th Street and Lenox Avenue, it was also a very similar situation. Vacant building, vacant for several years, on the corner of 125th Street and Lenox, southwest corner, opposite the newest development in Harlem, the Abyssinia Baptist Church construction on the northwest corner. Building caught fire. And the building, like I said, building was vacant for several years. Several protests in front of that building or series of buildings by people who are homeless waiting for city housing, protesting that the apartments are being speculated and kept off the market. That was just last year, where the last protest I saw. The building caught fire. The debris debris was in the street blocking one of four lanes on 125th Street all afternoon and into the evening while firemen were going through the building. I don't know what they were doing after the fire was out, except maybe they were looking for suspicious evidence.
Right. And do you have any reason to believe that the fire would make it easier for the owner of that property, whoever it is, to realize their development goals?
Brian, I don't know. I'm sorry. Am I Brian? I called you Brian.
I am Brian. You can call me Brian all day since I'm Brian.
Thank you. I don't know the finances of the building. I do know the history of evacuation of that corner, that 8 or 9 years ago, the retail stores in the ground floors started to be lease not renewed. People started moving up and down 125th Street to stores they had been in all for years. The corner store was a hat and shoe store. They had to move halfway down the block directly opposite President Clinton's new digs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where this fire, by the way, was a half a block from President Clinton's office.
Right, another corner.
But the contiguous building that represents the corner wraps around the on Lenox side and 125th Street side has been completely vacant now for a couple of years. And the building behind it on the Lenox Avenue side going south towards 125th Street has been vacant for at least a decade.
So, Derek, I'm going to move on, but thank you for that. And there's something else for any reporters who may be listening to run down and try to figure out the context with respect to another fire. Derek, thank you very much. And Mohammed in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC.
I'm in Manhattan.
Hi, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right, Brian. This is a very emotional subject for me because I was in two buildings of government. One, 25 J Street, and the other one, he kicked me from 25 J Street, sent me to 68 J Street, where, you know, he turned everything in the building down because I was the last tenant. For 2 years, he was fighting me, putting glue in my lock, dumping garbage in front of my door, breaking into my skylight, punching a hole in the wall.
And we will add the word allegedly, as a responsible news organization.
No, I have seen his men do it, and I called the police. I have photographs of it.
And what was the issue? He wanted you out so he could renovate the building and charge more?
Exactly. I had a 10-year lease, and I've seen him...
Who has a 10-year lease?
I had a 10-year lease.
This is a commercial lease, Mohammed?
It was a commercial lease.
Oh.
Right. But then I've seen him pull down a wall of a space of my neighbor while my neighbor was away. Not one, two walls. And when I called the police doesn't do anything against him.
Very interesting context. Mohammed, thank you very much. And so, you know, again, we can't verify those allegations, Tom, but I guess this reflects at least the kinds of relationships that some tenants feel they had with this landlord.
Pretty visceral. I mean, he says it's an emotional subject for him, as it well might be. I mean, you know, one of the things he says there is I think something that generally bears out is that police are reluctant to interfere in these situations. They can't tell who's right. They can't tell who's wrong. Sometimes it's very difficult for them to get involved in a landlord-tenant dispute, whether it's commercial tenant or residential tenant, which is why you really rely on HPD, that city's housing department, and the Department of Buildings as your first line of defense. And they've been so strapped in past years that it's been hard for them to intervene. But that's why in cases like this, they become really crucial.
93.9 AM 820 WNYC.org as we talk about the implications of the big fire in Greenpoint yesterday with Tom Robbins, columnist from The Village Voice, and Lisa Kersavage, a historic preservation fellow at the Municipal Arts Society. The Municipal Arts Society had filed to have some of those buildings that burned down preserved for their historic and architectural value, to the dismay of the developer who wants to put up five high-rises on that side along the East River. And, of course, there are suspicions, at least, that the fire, which was labeled likely arson by the fire commissioner, may have had something to do with that. And, Lisa, how does the battle you were fighting in Greenpoint fit into a citywide context for you? Is there one?
I think there definitely is. The reason the Municipal Arts Society first got involved with this was the rezoning of Greenpoint and Williamsburg, which should allow for residential towers on the waterfront. And in reviewing the rezoning, the city really failed to ignore the historic resources in the neighborhoods. And so we tried as hard as we could to raise attention to these very significant, important buildings. And we seem to be losing. The Austin Nichols Warehouse, which is down in Williamsburg, designed by Cass Gilbert, was designated by the Landmarks Commission, but it was overturned by the City Council. It seems like we might have lost this complex. The Domino Sugar Factory, which is also in Williamsburg, is about to be redeveloped. We're working to make sure that some of those buildings are preserved. And much further south in Red Hook, the IKEA is moving in and, paving over a Civil War era graving dock to make way for a parking lot. So I think that in planning our waterfront, we need to consider these historic resources and work to preserve them. I think they make the character of the city.
Let's take another call. Catherine in Greenpoint, you're on WNYC. Hello, Catherine.
Hi.
So what's up, Catherine?
Well, I was just calling in to respond a little bit to the historian. He said that maybe some of the buildings could be preserved that were burnt yesterday, and I live behind there, and from what I can tell, none of them are going to be able to be used in any kind of further development.
Oh, I'm sad to hear that.
Excuse me?
I'm sad to hear that.
Yeah, and, you know, when you're talking about, the disintegration of the buildings, it was very poignant yesterday as the firefighters were hosing down this one remaining corner after the rest had kind of crumbled to the ground. It wouldn't fall down, and it's still standing as kind of a reminder of the strength of the original structure. And, you know, it's just really sad. It's a great loss to the neighborhood and to Brooklyn's history.
Catherine, thank you for your call. Tom, the Gutman's lawyer is quoted saying they lose from this fire. They don't gain, that the fire causes more construction problems than the demolition they had planned, that this delays his plans, and that he certainly doesn't need all these questions being raised by people like us in the press. Do you dispute anything?
Well, that's for sure. He certainly doesn't need this headache right now that we and the callers are making for him. But look, as to the cost, clearly a fire that knocks a building down to the ground practically eliminates a lot of your demolition work. Then you've got cleanup work that come in afterwards. That's a lot cheaper. It takes a lot less time, just for starters. But they may well be able to make a case that somehow this would not benefit them, and maybe they have a persuasive argument to make there that, in fact, maybe they had a plan that would incorporate some of this into their buildings. Although, if they did have such a plan, they certainly didn't make it clear to folks like Lisa or David Yaski or the others who were talking about preserving it.
Lisa, anything on this?
Well, just what occurred to me is I wondered, does the city charge people if they find that it is arson? Do they have to pay back the costs for the firefighting?
Is there retribution clause in the law in addition to jail?
Well, there's something called big fines that are levied when there are convictions for that.
It also becomes a little difficult to get a building permit after that, I think. Andy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Hi there, Leonard. I'm Brian. Pardon me.
Derek knew who I was. Go ahead.
Hi, Brian. I'm a former tenant of Josh Gutman's, and I had a pretty negative experience with him.
Which was?
He rented me a space where there was a whole bunch of electric and gas meters in my space, and so we had an arrangement where he was allowed to come in and get the meter readings once a month, but that wasn't satisfactory for him, and he decided to build a wall. And he decided to do it while I wasn't home, and he broke into my house, poured a bunch of concrete on my bed, sort of make the point, and generally harassed me for the period of time when he had to do it.
Poured concrete on your bed?
Yes.
Everything but the horse's head, huh?
Yes. It was a little much.
Andy, thank you for your call. Well, again, we can't verify, but that's two callers who talked about things that allegedly the landlord did while they were away. Nate in Greenpoint are on WNYC. Hi, Nate.
Yeah, I watched the fire yesterday from my apartment, and I think it was pretty obvious that it was it was arson. I mean, the whole building is pretty much gone from the waterfront. The whole face is gone. And I think that these guys, they're putting up buildings that are total eyesores. I mean, they don't have the aesthetic that this building, the historic building, had. You know, the ones that are going up in Long Island City are really ugly.
Well, everybody wants the aesthetic of the neighborhood to stay the same when they live there, or not to be, you know, not to be made more dense anyway, or gentrified too much, and that becomes an issue.
Yeah, I think it's really too bad. I mean, like, what happens, you know, do they get a slap on the wrist if they are found to be guilty? I mean, there's an environmental, you know, concern with the plumes of smoke that were coming out.
Right. If they're found to be guilty of arson that caused this much damage, I'm sure it won't be a slap on the wrist. But, again, so far nobody in any position of authority is even accusing them of that. But, Lisa, some people see the city's history as being destroyed with a lack of attention to preservation like there might have been a couple of decades ago. Others see preservationists like you as holding up change and modern life on too many spots of too little interest around the city. How do you set a standard for what's actually worth preserving in a way that stops change?
Well, I think, you know, you have to look at the balance. It's something like less than 1 or 2% of the buildings in the city are designated. So there's large parts of the city that, you know, there's basically free rein except for the zoning requirements to develop. But I think there's always a way to integrate the historic buildings and the new. And we thought that here there were certainly opportunities to build towers on the waterfront. You know, there was some look like 1940s, 50s warehouse buildings here that we thought could be demolished, but keeping the most significant buildings. And I think that it's, you know, some of the best neighborhoods like Soho and Tribeca are former manufacturing neighborhoods. There's new buildings going in there, but they're seen as some, you know, the jewels of New York City. And I think that opportunity was possible in Greenpoint and Williamsburg, but that's not what the zoning called for.
Mary in the Bronx, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Great show.
Thank you.
I just want to comment, Brian. My son called last night, and he actually lives down the block from the fire. He lives on Oak Street. He rents an apartment there, and there's like a whole slew of just frame houses. And he said that if the wind had gone the other way, that whole block would have been destroyed. So it's also a loss of it could have been such a great loss of life and property also outside of it. You know, historical homes. So just wanted to say that, Brian.
Testament to the potential danger to human life.
I
not
know.
Just
he said that homeless people, you know, have been in those warehouses, but he just had no clue how it was started. But it was just so frightening.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for your call. And, Tom, it is kind of amazing, and thank goodness, apparently no one was seriously hurt, including some of the firefighters who were injured. Is that your understanding?
Yeah. No, it is a minor miracle, and because that was, I mean, look, I was in the west side of Manhattan early yesterday morning, and I could see an enormous cloud of very dark, acrid smoke coming in. It was clear that I thought it was possibly one of the oil tanks over by Greenpoint because of black smoke.
Yeah.
And I live in Brooklyn Heights this morning. You can still smell the acrid smell of the smoke is all over the neighborhood. It was reminiscent of 9/11 in that way.
Well, they say it'll take 2 days yet to put it out. Tom, one more thing real quick. We have 30 seconds. Here's an email that says, please ask Tom Robbins whether the city is adequately funding fire marshals who were cut in previous administrations. The arsonist Joe Bald would never have been caught without the work of highly experienced fire department detectives. 20 seconds.
Was that signed by John Knox? The answer is no. Since the incidents of arson went down, they reduced the funding. Maybe this will be incentive to get it back up.
Village Voice columnist Tom Robbins, Lisa Kersavage, preservationist with the Municipal Arts Society. A fire grew in Brooklyn, and it's still smoldering. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.